The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading The Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored, so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. And we'll start on the front page with the cover story headline from the Triangle Business Journal. Heading east. As companies in California look elsewhere in the country to open new or relocate operations, North Carolina finds itself reaping sizable gains. And the article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with a second headline. They're coming to Carolina. Prodded by the pandemic, companies are packing their bags and bringing their teams to North Carolina. This article is written by Lauren Onasorge. For Judith Irwin, CEO of a four-year-old New York-based Grasshopper Bank, COVID-19 sealed her decision to move to the Triangle. New York's packed sidewalks and standing-room-only subways were a recipe for the virus spread. And for Grasshopper Bank, an all-digital institution trying to disrupt a market long dominated by established giants such as J.P. Morgan Chase and Bank of America, the stakes were too high to risk a total shutdown. We wanted to have a fallback position, she says. New York is a place that does attract a lot of attention from bad people, as well as the pandemic. It just makes all the sense in the world to have another location in another region. So over the summer, Irwin began negotiating lease options for a second operation in Durham, and she hasn't looked back. She isn't alone. A new report out of United Van Lines puts North Carolina seventh in terms of states that saw the biggest influx of new moves between March and August of this year. Lior Rachmani, CEO of New York moving firm Dumbo Moving, says his company is seeing an unprecedented number of moves from New York to places such as Raleigh. By any measure, the COVID pandemic is doing this, not just the pandemic, but the panic of people in big cities, he says. Experts, Triangle Business Journal talked to, don't think it's a phenomenon that will slow anytime soon. Instead, they see it spreading like the virus, as both business owners and remote workers in expensive locales such as San Francisco and Manhattan weigh their options. But the question remains, how does the Triangle reel them in? For years, the problem for New Yorkers and Californians has been cost. A recent study out of Smart Asset estimates the median cost of a studio apartment in New York City is nearly $1,900. San Francisco fares even worse, with the median cost of a studio exceeding $2,000. Want a car? There's an extra $606 a month in the Big Apple, according to a 2017 study by Parkopedia that points to New York City as having the most expensive long-term parking in the world. And in San Francisco, monthly parking averages about $310, according to that same study. But cost of living is just one factor. Lease rates in Manhattan are easily double the rates in Raleigh. And in California, in particular, taxes have put a strain on businesses for some time. And new measures hitting the ballot could expedite the exodus, including Proposition 15, which would repeal certain protections for commercial landlords with more than $3 million in holdings. Businesses are kind of quaking in their boots, says Joe Vranick, a site selection consultant with Spectrum Location Solutions. I predict there will be an increase in companies seeking to leave California. Julio Gonzalez, CEO of Engineered Tax Services, says taxes will get higher in California regardless of what's passed in November. The taxes coming in are a lot less because of COVID, and so that's creating a big gap in terms of states' budgets. So what they're trying to do is adjust their budgets, increasing the taxes, he says. And with these increased taxes on the ballot for November, you're seeing more and more companies that are going to expedite leaving these places to go to the Carolinas. It's not just taxes, it's overall affordability, says Ted Abernathy, managing partner of Economic Leadership NC. Your taxes are one thing, but your state and local taxes don't look all that big if you're paying $5,000 for your 500 square feet, when you could live in a nice house with a good community with great public schools. With so many technology companies opting for a remote headcount, the recruitment game for North Carolina could completely change, says Chris Chung, CEO of the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina. Economic developers are used to recruiting companies, but with the workers now in control of where they set up their laptops, the competition could become one for human capital, he says. You're talking about a very fundamental shift at how you market a location, Chung adds. A different kind of competition. But as some of the workers migrating from New York and California can literally move anywhere, wins for North Carolina are not a guarantee. Texas, for example, has been pulling in massive investments from California in recent years. Both Apple and Tesla announced major investments in the Austin area, which wins when it comes to proximity in terms of California. North Carolina economic developers pitched for both projects. And when it comes to remote workers, it could come down to perception. Many consider North Carolina behind in urban amenities when it comes to locales like Austin. Population, too, is a consideration for technology companies, says Ari Rastgar, CEO of Texas-based Rastgar Property Company. Austin proper is just past 1 million people, he says. We're a little bit ahead in that regard, and that's a huge reason. Then you look at the Apples and the Googles and the Oracles and the Facebooks and all of the companies that are there. Paul Petrovic, a longtime developer in California, recently announced he's moving to Austin from the Bay Area. Both his residence and his company, Petrovic Development Company, he calls the California tax climate death by a thousand cuts and says its wealth tax measure finalized his decision. There hasn't been a tax in California's history that hasn't quadrupled or more once it's implemented, he says. So when you have a series of instruments and weapons set up against those of us that have started with the shirt on our backs and have lived the American dream, and then you start seeing not one but five different pieces of legislation coming down the pike, all of which are going to be getting worse over time, it's impossible. But Petrovic didn't even consider North Carolina, which, in addition to being a longer flight from California, is away from his social circle entirely. He says that while he's familiar with the culture and climate of Texas, he knows very little about North Carolina. He says the state shouldn't waste its time targeting California with its marketing dollars. Target New York, he says. I hear you can't even find a moving truck. Tech companies on the move. A handful of technology companies saw the trend coming long before COVID-19 struck, and all say they're hearing more interest than ever before from cohorts in New York and California. Jennifer Fitzgerald, CEO of Policy Genius, a New York insurance technology firm that recently picked Durham for its first hub outside of the Big Apple, says she's hearing CEOs talk about going full remote and about opening offices outside of the city. That's the hot topic across a lot of companies right now, she says. What to do about real estate? Maybe opening offices in cities like Raleigh-Durham or Nashville, places outside of New York, to take advantage of the population moving there, and there are cost savings on the real estate side. Vinreet Jain, founder of Palo Alto, California-based file-sharing software developer Egnite, pushed his firm to open a hub in Raleigh in 2019. Today, 65 employees are based on the 12th floor of the PNC building downtown. The capacity is 220. Across Egnite, Jane hopes to add 90 additional employees by the end of the year, and the vast majority of those positions will be in Raleigh. I am so glad I invested in offices outside of the Bay Area, he says. High taxation and prohibitive living costs have been challenging for some time in California, he says. People are saying, why do I need to hire this person in Mountain View or in San Francisco if I can find them in Raleigh? It's definitely a cost advantage. CloudBees, a Silicon Valley-based cloud startup, opened its East Coast hub in Centennial Campus in 2016. Another bet that paid off, says Ellen Thorne, Vice President of Human Resources. She sees the rise of remote working as fueling more companies to think about places like Raleigh. Even before the pandemic, CloudBees was 70% remote. Thorne finds that by looking outside the California bubble, her firm can find a diverse talent pool. We found we had more success in finding diverse talent by being wide open, by casting a wide net, saying, here's all the cities and countries we can recruit in, she says. Fitzgerald says executives have reached out to her about her company's decision to open in Durham with questions about how they might follow suit. Density is a big concern, even though New York's COVID numbers are currently looking better than those in North Carolina. Depending on what happens with local case counts and the public health situation in North Carolina, circumstances are more favorable, she says. People can drive to the office versus mass transit. Policy Genius is watching those numbers closely, as are other companies looking to make decisions about where to bolster their headcounts. A long perspective. One man who knows a lot about the trend is Jim Captain, the now retired former head of the Triangle's Credit Suisse operation, who was instrumental in bringing more than 3,000 high-paying jobs to the Triangle. When 9/11 struck, the Swiss banking giant looked for hub sites outside of the city initially as a way to mitigate risk after a jarring terrorist attack. That bet more than paid off. Captain, who now lives in Florida, says he's surprised there are companies that have yet to look outside New York. 19 years ago, people decided that they were way too concentrated in one location, and even the Federal Reserve was pushing everybody to think about diversifying their operations, he says. In New York, people have to be looking at, what are we doing here? You're much more exposed to everything, whether it's terrorism or viruses. Any high population areas, you're going to be more exposed than in less populated areas. Common sense says you need to think of some strategy to get out of there. As for Ignite's Jane, he says if he could do it all over again, he would have started with a tiny office in Silicon Valley, and I would have put a much bigger entire team in a place like Raleigh. I think a lot of people feel that way, he says. And now we turn to the continuing series, The Promise of, the headline, Keeping an Account. Durham CPA firm dispenses services and fiscal advice to keep clients in business. This story is written by Connie Gentry. About this project. The project name is based on a historical reference relating to Union Army leader William Sherman's promise of giving 40 acres to slaves after the Civil War. That promise, which came to be known as 40 acres and a mule, never came through as President Andrew Johnson rescinded the order after taking office. Time for a reality check. Last year's budget has no bearing on today's reality, says Shawana Hudson, partner at Thompson & Gibbs CPAs. The emphasis, especially for our nonprofit clients, has shifted from budget to cash flow. Her advice for business owners is to explore different scenarios. It doesn't require sophisticated modeling. Just compare the coming quarter with what has changed from 4Q 2019. Be kind of brutal about it, she cautions. It's not about a wish and a prayer. It's about the reality of how much you expect to earn and what your obligations will be in the near term. Founding partner Ken Gibbs elaborates, look critically at the business, and if revenues have been impacted substantially, look at your cost structure. Ask yourself, do I have enough people? Can I afford these people? Should they be part-time? You've got to look at every aspect of the business if you're going to survive. Strong statements, but Gibbs also sees potential for growth. The key thing with any disaster is to identify opportunities that come about. And he cites the boom in demand for janitorial services and the influx of companies making masks. Since launching the firm in 2001 with former partner Bruce Thomas, who retired at the end of 2019, Gibbs has established a reputation among the Triangle's leading certified public accountants and business consultants. Although 2020 may not measure up to recent years when annual revenue was running around $1.5 million, the firm is holding steady and has not furloughed any employees. It serves a number of clients, from individuals and entrepreneurs who own small businesses, such as restaurants or physician practices, to charter schools, government agencies, nonprofits, and even the North Carolina Lottery, where they've served for 13 years as the draw auditor for live drawings. That last may sound like fun and games, but Gibbs notes, while it gives the firm daily unpaid advertising, it also comes with significant responsibilities. We are essentially ensuring that the lottery follows the same process each time, and there's an extensive checklist of procedures that happen before the few seconds of the drawing on air, Hudson says. It involves testing the machine, testing the ball, all kinds of processes to make sure the selection is truly random and the general public has a fair opportunity to win. We take this work very seriously, and we have a number of client engagements that are about compliance and ensuring procedures are followed consistently. Hudson focuses her expertise on the audit and assurance side of the business. Gibbs handles the tax and bookkeeping engagements, and they share responsibilities for managing the firm. As a CPA firm, we're advising clients, but we also have all of the same issues in our business, HR, payroll, benefits. We have to be knowledgeable about them, and we become advisors on those things, he adds. Generally, a CPA firm experiences a busy season from mid-January to April 15, but since Thomas & Gibbs also does bookkeeping, its busy season starts in December. When tax deadlines were extended to July 15, it stretched out both the workload and revenue across several months, so Thomas & Gibbs acquired a PPP loan through M&F Bank, though the firm declined to state the amount. The firm also advised clients on PPP loans. A few needed help identifying actual payroll they would submit and understanding what the loans were. Most importantly, whether they would meet the forgiveness requirements, Gibbs explains. And for those who got EIDL loans, understanding the difference between the economic injury disaster loans and PPP loans was important. It helped that Thomas & Gibbs had already invested in technology needed to transition into a paperless environment. We now have the tools to work remotely, which was critical in the spring, Hudson says. Businesses don't stop. They still need to pay their people and meet their compliance requirements, and CPAs are considered essential personnel. We are able to share information securely, and all of those steps that were in place just got accelerated. Neither she nor Gibbs see the firm returning to a pre-COVID mode of operation even after the health risks have been resolved. One change: weekly meetings have been replaced by daily Zoom meetings to keep the entire staff abreast of company priorities. You can become Zoomed out, Gibbs admits. But I don't see it going back 100% to how it was before, and why would you want to? Half of our staff works from home. As a company, we're looking at everything. The people who aren't in the office anymore, the space we have, the equipment. What does that look like in the future? Another area being addressed is helping clients understand that professional advice rendered virtually is as valuable as in-person consultations. When people came to the office for meetings, they expected you'd charge a consultation fee. Well, now they're calling or Zooming, and you have to remind them it's still the same level of professional service, and we will be charging for that, Gibbs explains. We're looking more closely at how we're billing our time and expertise and what kind of margins we want. For entrepreneurs looking to start a business, his advice is to fully understand what it takes to run that business. Work for someone first and learn all you can. And along with that article, there are two percentages. 1% of partners in CPA firms are Black, 91% are white, and 2% of CPAs are Black, 84% are white. And the information on the company in a section called A Closer Look. Firm name, Thomas & Gibbs CPAs. Location, 6114 Fayetteville Road, Durham. Founding partner, Kenneth D. Gibbs. Partner, Shawana Hudson. Founded October 1st, 2001. Revenue, $1.5 million. Employees, 14. And there are two short news items along with the promise of DRA grants will give preference to MBES. The Downtown Raleigh Alliance has established a storefront revitalization grant program with a total funding pool of $125,000. Grants of up to $5,000 will be awarded to businesses selected by the DRA committee. Preference will be given to locally owned businesses and to support minority and women entrepreneurs. To be eligible for the grant, storefronts must be a consumer-facing business, such as a retailer, restaurant, or personal service. They must have 50 or fewer employees, be located downtown, and have been open prior to May 30, 2020. The goal is to help boost downtown businesses in the wake of COVID-19 and current unrest. Grants can be used to help a business pivot, for instance, modifying physical space or improving e-commerce sales, expanding capacity for delivery of goods and services. Grants may also be used for repair costs not covered by insurance or landlord reimbursement. B of A allocates $300 million of $1 billion commitment. In June, Bank of America pledged $1 billion to advance racial equality and economic opportunity. This month, the company said how one-third of that investment, $300 million, will be used. Over the next 4 years, $200 million will provide direct equity investments in Black and Latinx-owned businesses. Another $50 million will be allocated to minority depository institutions, or MDIs. Supporting employment initiatives is also a focus, and $25 million is committed to grants that will enhance skills training for Black and Latinx individuals. This will be done through partnerships with 11 community colleges and 10 public colleges that are historically Black colleges and universities, HBCUs, or Hispanic-serving institutions, HSIs. Another $25 million will go to philanthropic support in underserved and minority communities that have been significantly impacted by the global health and humanitarian crisis. And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Seafood Mecca, Calabash, Cape Fear Region, see growth. Calabash used to be a quiet corner of North Carolina, a coastal village right by the South Carolina line known for its seafood restaurants. But if you've stopped in recently, the boom in the southeastern part of the state is quickly evident. Shops, homes, and fresh developments line what was once open space. The population was just 711 in the 2000 U.S. Census, but has since soared past 2,200. And it's a similar story around Brunswick County. In fact, the Cape Fear Realtors Organization noted more homes were closed in August in its three-county region, 1,383, than in August 2019, 1,167. And pending sales in the region were 1,598, up a whopping 52% from 1,048 the year before. The median sales price has jumped to $273,500, up from $250,000 a year ago. We normally see housing activity begin to slow a bit during the back-to-school season, but this year is far from normal, says Cape Fear Realtors President Tony Harrington. But with mortgage rates low and pent-up demand, interest in the Calabash corner of North Carolina is intense. Historic Durham building to be renovated. The new owner of a Durham building that dates to the 1920s plans to bring extensive mixed-use renovations to the property, calling for the redevelopment of the interior while maintaining the structure's historic facade. Earlier this summer, Durham developer Nish Evans, Lennox & Gray, brought on architect Little and announced plans to transform the building at 310 East Main Street. The property currently features two residential units on the second floor and commercial space on the first. The exterior facade will be preserved while the inside will see extensive commercial and residential renovations. Evans plans to redevelop the first floor and basement for retail or commercial use, accommodating an existing tenant that's a recording studio. New initiative looks to help businesses support families. A new effort from the North Carolina Early Childhood Foundation is looking to help businesses be prepared to help employees and their families once the pandemic subsides. Millennials demand a different work-life balance, says Lisa Finaldi, the community engagement leader for the foundation. You can get on that train or you can miss it and be left behind. The goal is to help up to 50 businesses by the end of the year by providing coaching and support on how to strategically reopen with policies that will support and retain employees. Companies can apply with the foundation for help evaluating paid leave possibilities, child care, and making schedules predictable. People in low-wage jobs often don't have a predictable schedule, Finaldi says, which puts a particular strain on parents. Duke Law School gets big grant for criminal justice reform. A Duke University graduate has made a $5 million gift to the Duke Law School to bolster its criminal justice reform efforts. Derek Wilson earmarked money for the school's Center for Science and Justice. When injustices hold people back, our entire country suffers, he says. The current criminal system disproportionately harms minority communities. Wilson earned his undergraduate and MBA degrees from Duke. The funds will expand the center's work, focusing on the accuracy of evidence in criminal cases, the role of equity, and the behavioral health treatment needs of people in the justice system. UNC says school may take a different approach to spring. It took COVID-19 only 2 weeks to smash UNC Chapel Hill's hopes for reopening in the fall semester. So the school is reconsidering its options for spring, and that has major implications both for the school budget and the many businesses that feed off of a bustling campus. In a lengthy interview with the Daily Tar Heel, Chancellor Kevin Guskowitz said, "I don't regret any decisions. We've learned a lot. What I'm proud of is that we prepared a campus within the boundaries of the campus here that was safe. We perhaps underestimated some of the mass gatherings that were going to take place off campus and then how that would potentially influence the spread of the virus within the residence halls. And so that's what we're working really hard on, is to try to do everything to mitigate that as we make plans for the future." Carolina also may look at testing on the front end and a phased return to dorms and classroom teaching. And finally, patrons return to the North Carolina Museum of Art. The North Carolina Museum of Art finally flung open its doors as Governor Roy Cooper allowed for more leniency at this stage of the pandemic. The museum allowed people to sign up for tickets online to limit crowds and still had high interest after being closed for months. Museum officials say 3,000 people visited from when it opened September 9 through 13, though those numbers are below what the museum would see in normal times. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Finance and Technology page, written by Lauren Onasorge. Bandwidth weighed Durham for HQ project. Public records show Bandwidth considered Durham as a site for the massive headquarters it has pledged to build in Raleigh as part of a $100 million expansion. Bandwidth described both Durham and Wake counties as competitive in a slew of emails and communications released by the North Carolina Department of Commerce at the behest of a records request. Sites in Denver and Rochester, New York were also considered. Documents did not include an exact location Bandwidth had considered in Durham, and a Bandwidth spokeswoman declined to elaborate. "We looked at dozens of locations in the Triangle, and many were very appealing," Noreen Allen said in an email. In an incentives application draft filed with state officials, Bandwidth listed the possibility of nearly $3 million in incentives from Wake County. Next to Durham County, it wrote TBD. Durham has provided their initial letter that essentially highlights how this project would fit in with the board's incentives policy, the company wrote in an incentives proposal draft to state officials last year. No amount provided. By November, Durham had been eliminated from the pool of possibilities, emails show. Initially, recruiters in North Carolina had hoped to make the project announcement by the end of 2019, but proposals were still going back and forth even as late as March, just days before the actual announcement. Emails from March 20 show Bandwidth told the state it would proceed with the project, but only if it were held to just an 80% minimum job creation count in order to get incentives. "Sounds like a plan we can all live with," said David Spratley, Senior Assistant Secretary of Finance at Commerce. Bandwidth would ultimately decide to bring 1,185 jobs and $106.4 million in investment to Raleigh, in exchange for a job development investment grant worth up to $32.2 million. Persistence AI plans to hire hundreds of remote workers. The new normal, working from home instead of commuting to an office park, was really the old normal for Raleigh-based Persistence AI, a startup planning to hire hundreds of remote gig workers in the coming months, according to its CEO. Pre-pandemic, the company's 12 full-time workers were already working remotely, though the firm did have space at both HQ Raleigh, now called Raleigh Founded, and WeWork, CEO Ed Holloway says. But since the pandemic hit, it has scratched contracts from both co-working hubs entirely and plans to shift to a full work-from-home model. And with so much of the talent pool suddenly seeking remote opportunities, the firm is expediting its own recruiting plans. Holloway says the company is getting ready to hire hundreds of remote workers in the Triangle and beyond, staffing virtual call centers for companies across North America. Firm targets early-stage startups with fund. A new venture capital fund is raising cash and seeking deals, dubbed OPC Venture Fund 1 LP. It's out of Oval Park Capital of Raleigh and soliciting minimum investments of $200,000 to invest in technology companies. And of the fund's $25 million target It has raised $4.5 million so far. Securities filings show. It's the brainchild of Justin Wright Eakes, a Durham native who spent 8 years at hedge funds in New York before returning to the Triangle in 2015. After starting in angel investing, Wright Eakes created Oval Park, which began sponsoring its own deals in 2018. He began approaching high net worth individuals and family offices to fund the investments. Each fund was dedicated to a specific investment, such as a $350,000 round that, a year ago, contributed to the $50 million Series A round of lotion startup Carpe. Work from home is an imperative, FinTech CEO says. One of North Carolina's newest public companies is seeing new business opportunities emerging from the pandemic's new normal. That's according to Pierre Naud, CEO of Wilmington-based banking software firm nCino. That's spelled N, capital C-I-N-O. He told analysts this month on an earnings call that COVID-19 has given the finance industry a realization now that work from home is not a luxury anymore. It's just an imperative, Naud says. If you live in a city like London and you're commuting an hour and a half each way per day, why would you waste 3 hours in a train if you can do your job from home? The company, which went public in July, has more than 1,100 financial institution customers, from Bank of America to Barclays and Truist. And Naud told analysts, nCino has only begun to penetrate our market opportunity. The firm estimates its serviceable available market at $10 billion. It does say nCino. Okay. Revenue for the second quarter rose 52% year over year to $48.8 million. Subscription revenue rose 70% year over year to $39.4 million. And finally, USGA thrilled to have close tie to Triangle. Mike Davis, executive director of the U.S. Golf Association, says the fact that the firm's new research and testing center is in Pinehurst, just down the road from Research Triangle Park, is a major boon. All equipment, from balls to clubs used in USGA tournaments, must be tested by the USGA, and the group also will use the center to innovate. Already, the USGA relies on university research, having worked with NC State University on everything from turf grass to maintenance initiatives. But the scope of what it's hoping to innovate at the new research center in Pinehurst is broader. There are a lot of things we use engineers and scientists for that involve the game of golf, Davis says. Being near the Research Triangle, being near renowned universities, is a great thing from our perspective. And now we turn to Caleb Harshberger's page on real estate. Pandemic delays start of 32-story tower in Raleigh. An Atlanta developer is delaying the start date for its 32-story tower in downtown Raleigh due to the pandemic. But its CEO says there's no reason for concern. Preferred Office Properties originally planned to begin work this year on its 121 Fayetteville project, but it has now pushed back the start of construction to sometime in 2021. Company president and CEO Boone Dupree says the firm has no plans to step away from the project and has published the latest renderings for the building and a virtual video tour. COVID wasn't built into our pre-development plan, he says. I feel just as confident as we ever have about the project. All things considered, Raleigh is still the top of everyone's list, it seems, in every category. There are near-term challenges, but the long-term trends are positive. The project design has stayed essentially the same since last year, calling for a 32-story tower with a 7-story parking deck and 375,000 square feet of office space over ground floor retail. Plans also include a 15th floor lobby with a terrace and fitness center. Dupree says the firm hopes to begin construction next year and says the company is under no pressure to drop the project if challenges continue. We wanted to start in 2020. Now I want to start in 2021, Dupree says. We have really no gun to our head. It doesn't cost us anything to carry the site. We really want to get it built. It's just balancing all of that and ambitions to get it started and needing to be realistic. Michigan REIT buys site of Chapel Hill's new Wegmans. A Michigan investor has bought the site of the future Chapel Hill Wegmans as the grocer gears up for an expected spring opening. The sale comes about a month after the site of the new Wegmans in Cary was sold. On September 11, investor Agree Realty Corporation of Bloomfield Hills, Michigan, paid $32 million for the site. The property is situated on 13 acres at 1810 Fordham Boulevard, down the road from the New Hope Commons Shopping Center. The seller, Texas-based Leon Capital Group, paid $11.9 million for the property in 2017. Since then, work has begun on the Wegmans building. The company hasn't announced an official opening date for the Chapel Hill location, but a company representative says the company is expecting to open in the spring. Wegmans is now hiring for the location with plans to have around 400 people employed at the store. The company is also hiring for its Wake Forest location, which is also slated to open next year. The first Triangle Wegmans opened last year in Raleigh, the company's 100th store. The Chapel Hill store is one of six the company has planned for the region. Biotech giant to demolish iconic site, build campus. United Therapeutics is looking to expand in Research Triangle Park with a new campus, a plan that has been 8 years in the making. Earlier this month, the Maryland company announced it is developing a master plan for a new campus on land it bought in 2012. The company is still in the early planning stages and has yet to announce the specifics, but did say that site work is underway. The property is situated on 132 acres and is the site of the iconic Burroughs Welcome Building. United Therapeutics paid $17.5 million to GlaxoSmithKline for the site in 2012. The building, built in 1972 and designed by Paul Rudolph, is known for its spaceship-like architecture. United said the building will be demolished to make room for the future campus. The Manhattan-based Paul Rudolph Heritage Foundation has started a petition to save the building, but Dewey Stedman, United's head of investor relations, said the site's current building and infrastructure limit the redevelopment opportunities for the property and will be removed in the near future. What makes this property special, truly special, is the groundbreaking research and life-saving medicines that were developed here. Local office complex fetches $41 million. A Cleveland investor with a history of snatching up at least one government-leased property in the Triangle is at it again with a $41.6 million buy of a Raleigh office complex dating to 1986. On September 3rd, Boyd Watterson Asset Management bought Somerset Park, which houses such tenants as the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the North Carolina Natural Resources Conservation Service. The property features 206,829 square feet of office space across four buildings. The seller, Charlotte-based Mountain Real Estate Capital, took ownership after the previous owner filed for bankruptcy. Founded in 1928, Boyd Watterson has assets and offices around the country. Last year, it purchased the Orange County Social Services office property in Hillsborough for $8.75 million. And a number along with this article is 17.5 acres. The size of the property, which is located at 4407 Bland Road off Wake Forest Road next to the Fall Center Shopping Mall in North Raleigh. And final article, Raleigh developer plans shopping center. A Raleigh developer has filed plans to bring a new retail center near Dorothea Dix Park, a part of the city that's expected to see a boom in new development in the years to come. Earlier this month, Atlas Stark filed plans to transform a string of auto service properties into a new retail and creative office project just down the road from Dix Park. We're pretty early in the site plan and design over there, says Gabe Guloy, managing partner at Atlas Stark. Just from a design perspective, we expect some creative office space and food and beverage. Filings with the city say the redeveloped property will feature 26,231 square feet of shopping center space. The site is currently made up of four parcels with four connected single-story structures. And a number that goes along with this article is $4.75 million, the amount paid by Atlas Stark for the properties across two transactions in 2019. The project is situated on 1.25 acres at 1048 South Saunders Street. And now we go to the page written by Seth Thomas Gulledge on healthcare, higher ed. NC Bio says Trump move will cost NC jobs. A group representing the life sciences industry in North Carolina is calling President Donald Trump's executive order to slash drug prices an existential threat to jobs and innovation in the state. On September 14, the North Carolina Biosciences Organization, or NC Bio, issued a statement condemning Trump's order to adopt international reference pricing for certain prescription pharmaceuticals, saying that it will threaten pharmaceutical, clinical research, and related jobs in North Carolina. "This is an existential threat to the biopharmaceutical industry in North Carolina," NC Bio President Sam Taylor said. "We're trying to bring this reality to the attention of President Trump's advisors. I think he's getting some really bad advice from people who don't understand the impact of this strategy that they're using to try to control prices." The executive order, signed September 13, would tie the Medicare reimbursement for drugs to the price the drugs sell for abroad, which is often significantly lower than in the U.S. The prices for drugs will be drawn from the lowest price among members of the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, or a most favored national price. The order hopes to substantially lower the price of therapeutics, but Taylor said drug companies are concerned it will cost jobs, stifle innovation, and lead to the severely reduced vitality of the industry. "As the number two pharmaceutical manufacturing state in the nation, our economy will be impacted disproportionately by the president's order," Taylor said. "The order will also hurt North Carolina's innovative young pharmaceutical companies by discouraging venture investment in drug discovery and development. The pharmaceutical innovation ecosystem that North Carolina has for so long nurtured would lose the financial backing it needs to create new companies and commercialize new pharmaceutical innovations." Maryland company acquires firm that spun out of UNC. A Chapel Hill startup focused on financial services for higher education has been acquired by a Maryland-based technology company, a deal that promises more growth in the Triangle. On September 15, Helio Campus of Bethesda, Maryland, announced the acquisition of ABC Insights, a Chapel Hill firm that offers services to assist financial strategy in higher education. The company is a spin-out of UNC Chapel Hill, and with the acquisition is now one of the first success stories to come out of the launch Chapel Hill Business Accelerator, a joint program between UNC, Orange County, and Chapel Hill that looks to capitalize on talent and innovation coming out of the universities. ABC Insights bills itself as a leading higher education benchmarking consortium that helps its members better understand their administrative spend levels and compare to peer institutions to direct and shape financial decision making. NC State tapped to solve challenges in COVID testing. Throughout the pandemic, the shortage of testing kits has been lamented by public health officials. Now, researchers at NC State University are tasked with addressing logistical inefficiencies. University researchers have received a one-year, $600,000 grant from the National Institute for Innovation in Manufacturing Biopharmaceuticals, earmarked to address the logistics of COVID-19 testing kit allocation. The goal is that by creating a model, the momentous amount of factors involved in the supply chain can create more efficiency. "This is an extremely complex supply chain with many different players and a host of variables to consider," says Rob Hanfield, an NC State professor of operations and supply chain management, who is the principal investigator of the grant. "We are going to start by developing the model for North Carolina and will extend this to the U.S. by the end of the project. Part of the challenge will be simply identifying all of the suppliers of test kits and materials." Metabolon raises $21.7 million, seeks more. A Morrisville firm raised $21.7 million from investors as it looks to continue developing its technology. Metabolon recently disclosed the fundraising round in a filing to the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. According to the filing, the company began raising the funds August 28th with a total offering of $48 million of company equity. Metabolon focuses on metabolomics technology for research and precision medicine, which involves using genes and other factors to individualize a patient's treatment. Its technology is used across multiple research areas when it comes to personalized medicine, from cancer to immunology. According to a company representative, the incremental funding aims to help accelerate our growth and expand our client base, in addition to helping further our R&D programs in machine learning to enable novel biomarker discovery and expand our precision medicine platform. And then finally, in a section called She Said It, a quote by Dr. Mira Viswanathan, an RTI researcher and lead author of a new study looking at the effectiveness of screening methods that found they miss at best 20% of infected individuals. Our research shows that the likelihood of missing a person who may have COVID-19 through screening is extremely high, because screening is likely to miss many people who are infected. Public health measures such as face coverings, physical distancing, and quarantine for those who have had contact with an infected person remain critical. And we have one article on the On Business page written by David Pertell. Durham Biotech says nitric oxide can combat COVID-19. A Durham pharmaceutical firm says it has made a breakthrough in researching a potential treatment for COVID-19. NoBio says it has produced the first definitive evidence that nitric oxide can prevent the reproduction of the virus in infected cells. Nitric oxide is naturally produced by the human body and acts as part of the immune response. Since COVID-19 began to spread across the globe, researchers have suggested nitric oxide could be a potential treatment for the disease. NoBio, which focuses on developing treatments using nitric oxide, conducted in vitro experiments using multiple nitric oxide-releasing compounds on cells infected with COVID-19. The result was a greater than 99.9% reduction in virus observed after 24 hours versus virus observed on untreated cells, the company said. As a leader in the development of NO-based therapies, we felt we were best positioned to establish that nitric oxide is effective against this virus, CEO Neil Hunter said. The company plans to submit its data for publication and peer review by the end of the year. The expansive literature supporting nitric oxide's function as a broad-spectrum antimicrobial shows that nitric oxide-based approaches can play a role in preventing, limiting, and/or treating the pulmonary consequences of COVID-19, said Mark Schoenfisch, NoBio's chief scientific officer. Our findings clearly show that nitric oxide-based therapeutics must be a part of any well-thought response to the COVID-19 pandemic, Hunter said. The company, a spin-out from Morrisville-based Novan, was founded in 2015. Its portfolio of subsidiaries has been working to develop a nitric oxide platform for a variety of therapeutic uses. Last year, it received $30 million in funding from SAS co-founder Jim Goodnight's Reedy Creek Investments. Hunter was a co-founder and former CEO of Durham-based Cree. As for the use of nitric oxide in treating COVID-19, other researchers have been looking into its potential. A clinical trial being conducted by researchers at Louisiana State University on COVID-19 patients produced preliminary results that show patients that received inhaled nitric oxide were able to breathe more easily and didn't show major side effects. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook written by Editor-in-Chief Sugata Mukherjee. The headline, Report Offers Economic Opportunity for Triangle, North Carolina. In reading the latest Economic Outlook report released September 16 by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, or OECD, one thing became clear. There's a lot of economic hurt about to come for plenty of countries around the world, including the U.S. The OECD's latest projections were a little better than its projections just 3 months ago, but with a big asterisk, the need for another $1.5 trillion economic stimulus must happen in the U.S. before it is too late. The OECD maintains the country's economy will shrink about 3.8% this year, but will grow 4% next year. For all intents and purposes, the macro outlook seems to indicate that the economic situation is not likely to vastly improve or decline in the next 2 years. But what caught my eye is the report also indicated how the winners and losers, in terms of countries, states, and regions, may be chosen when we arrive in the post-pandemic world. That's where area companies, research consortiums, economic developers, and policymakers may have the biggest advantage of most areas in the U.S. Why? OECD researchers believe investing in health systems will be critical for countries and the state to bring the virus under control. But more importantly, it will allow for certain areas in the world to become a nucleus for research, discovery, and development. Other than areas around Boston, San Diego, and Silicon Valley, is anyone more prepared than the vast number of companies and research institutions located around the 20-mile perimeter of the Research Triangle Park? I don't think so. OECD researchers believe the countries that will come out and solidify their economic strength would invest in sustainable products, services, and behavior that would include green energy, infrastructure, transport, and housing to speed up low-carbon transition. Again, led by the local universities in Raleigh, Durham, and Chapel Hill, here's an opportunity for all, and I mean all, from 10 people to 10,000 workers to start developing a plan to follow the lead from colleges and universities. Hire the engineers as consultants who can guide you through the process as you can create a P&L for how your company will look in 10 years. If you do that now, it is more than likely you will outshine your competitors. And OECD research shows companies, regions, and countries that invest in people by providing adequate social protection for the vulnerable and invest in our youth to supply the labor force for this new type of work are the ones that will create wealth, add jobs, and be on the forefront of tomorrow's mergers and acquisitions. That's an area where the Triangle and North Carolina leaders have come up with a plan. We have the ingredients, but we still don't know how to cook. Our political differences have stymied our broader cause of setting aside color, gender, and other differences to lift everyone. There will be winners and losers by this time next year. Already, businesses are failing at an alarming rate, and thousands are barely staying open. If our state and national lawmakers cannot get together to pump additional stimulus into the system, our economic recovery will stall. Already, retail sales took a hit in August after the $600 in federal unemployment checks ran out, and September looks even worse. We need a new blueprint for growth. This OECD report provides us with some guidance. And in some news from around the state, Panther's worth rises to $2.6 billion, Forbes says. This is written by Eric Spanberg. The value of the Carolina Panthers increased by 6% to $2.6 billion over the past year, according to Forbes magazine's latest annual NFL franchise rankings. For the 14th year in a row, the Dallas Cowboys topped the franchise value list, worth an estimated $5.7 billion. Following the Cowboys in the top five are the New England Patriots, $4.4 billion, New York Giants, $4.3 billion, Los Angeles Rams, $4 billion, and San Francisco 49ers, $3.8 billion. Overall, NFL teams are worth an average of $3.05 billion, or 7% more than a year ago. Carolina ranked 22nd among the 32 franchises. Forbes also recently ranked the wealthiest team owners in U.S. sports. Panthers owner David Tepper at $13 billion was second, trailing only Steve Ballmer, the former Microsoft CEO. Ballmer's net worth is $69 billion. He owns the NBA Los Angeles Clippers. Tepper, who amassed his personal fortune as a hedge fund trader, paid $2.3 billion for the Panthers in 2018, a record price for an NFL team. In December 2019, he added a Major League Soccer expansion team, paying a league record $325 million. During a recent media video conference, Tepper told reporters that a lack of fans at NFL games and other effects of the pandemic will lead to deficits for the Panthers and other teams. Red ink's going to flow, he said, attributing the Panthers' 23 layoffs and furloughs last month, in part to those financial pressures. Since he bought the Panthers, the team has endured back-to-back losing seasons, finishing 7-9 in 2018 and 5-11 last year. Tepper has brought in a new head coach, Matt Rhule, and though through cuts and attrition, made over the Panthers' roster. Familiar faces such as Cam Newton, Luke Kuechly, and Greg Olsen are no longer with the team. Whether Carolina loses money in 2020 is yet to be seen, but according to Forbes, Tepper's franchise increased operating income by 23% in 2019. That translated to a profit of $96 million, up from $78 million the previous year. Revenue grew by 5.4% to $447 million versus $424 million in 2018. The Panthers were worth $2.4 billion on the 2019 Forbes list. The NFL remains the most lucrative sports league in the world based on collective revenue and franchise values. Fresh Market expected to move into new headquarters this year. This article is written by John Brazier. When will the new Greensboro headquarters for the Fresh Market be ready? Before the end of 2020. Megan Flynn, the gourmet supermarket chain's director of communications and community, says, though she says the office space in the Wells Fargo Tower at 300 North Green Street in downtown Greensboro would be completed by December, Flynn says an exact move-in date had not yet been set and the date would be dependent on a number of factors. Flynn says construction began in June. Fourth Elm Construction of Kernersville estimated the work for the renovation upfit for 70,376 square feet of Fresh Market at $3.96 million in a recent permit application. Fresh Market announced it was investing $5.4 million in the new space, including upfit, furnishings, and equipment. Fresh Market is owned by Apollo Global Management, an alternative investment manager firm. With its move from Green Valley Road to the Wells Fargo Tower, Fresh Market will join Centric Brands in making a move to downtown Greensboro. Centric moved into the old Greensboro Gateway Center last fall, committing to the creation of 213 new jobs and $2 million investment in the building to obtain incentives from the city of Greensboro. A significant portion of Global Brands Group had operated in Grandover Office Park before it was acquired by Differential Brands Group, setting the stage for the creation of Centric. And finally, the Business Survey Pulse. Do you think Congress will pass additional stimulus for businesses before the general election? 121 people responded. 69% say no. 31% say yes. And we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.